Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Spark Radio Show, filled with strategies, possibilities, actions, resources, and knowledge that may be the spark of a better solution to ignite a positive change in your life. The number to call if you have questions for Melanie or any of our guests is area code 347-215-8390. Now, here's your host, Ms. Melanie.
Welcome back to Spark Radio. I am your host, Ms. Melanie, and as always, it is my pleasure to be with you, and I appreciate your investment of time to be here. Hope you enjoyed that crackling fire at the beginning. It was a little long some days, although if you're chilly, it can really warm you up. So I hope that you have had some amazing weeks since we were together last. I appreciate those of you who also download past podcasts. Coming up on celebrating an anniversary in October. And tonight, the focus of our show is on getting ready for transitions to school, how to have success in the new school year that's ahead. I may or may not have my 11-year-old as a guest. He's not sure he's going to do it or not, but if he decides he is, we'll ask him a question or two. What? All right, so we may have him in a little bit. And in the meantime, wanted to spend some time sharing some resources and strategies to help you be successful, whether you're the student or whether you're a parent with children going to school, to recognize that there are some things you can do that will make the transition go more effectively for you. Last Saturday, Lynette Patterson, my Saving Superwoman colleague, and I did a podcast on called Back to School, Success or Stressful or Successful, where we shared some strategies there as well. And one of the things that can really be helpful or harmful when it comes to school success is what you're doing for your brain. And for those of you who are regular listeners, you know that I am a certified brain-based trainer. And learning about the brain is a passion of mine, as is helping clients and followers to discover and use good resources and information about the brain, because you're not born with a manual. I love the opportunity to help people live their passions with their best brains as the CEOs of their life or lives. And so whether it's if you're interested in having your better brain, having it work at peak performance for you, or discovering or rediscovering your passions and how to have more of them in your life, I use the passion test. I'm a certified passion test facilitator. And as the CEO of your life, I'm also certified in accountability that works with creator Linda Galindo, who has authored the book most recently, The 85% Solution. And I've interviewed Linda as a guest on the show. I'm excited, as I've just sent out another call for guests, authors who can support whether it's accountability, the passion test, where I've also interviewed guests about how they've rediscovered their passion, as well as colleagues who've authored books and have programs to help you have your best brain. So are you taking your best brain to work or to school? Do you have your best brain at home? And what can you do? What actions can you take that can make a difference and help you to enjoy your best brain rather than to have to struggle because for most of us, we do take better care of our hair and our skin or our cars than we do of our brains. And our brains are such a key part of everything that we do. It's our personality, our emotions, our physical health, our ability to think and focus and pay attention and problem solve. And yet, there's so much most people don't know. So let's take a look at it from a learning perspective and some things that you can do to get ready, to gear up, to have your best brain. There are some wonderful resources both on brainbonanza.com, which is my business site. That's BRAINBONANZA.com, as well as Brain Booster Club, which is brain-booster-club.com, just like a sports booster club. And, you know, if you can become a brain booster instead of a brain buster, you'll be more successful in school and in life. So let's start first with some of the lifestyle choices that we make, or that as parents we can help our children make, so that they develop good habits, good brain-friendly, brain-boosting habits. So let's talk first about sleep. Tomorrow is the first day of school for my son, who's 11. He'll be starting sixth grade tomorrow. And we took supplies up and met his new teacher, who's new to the district tonight. They had a good conversation about what she's interested in and his experience. She teaches science, social studies. He loves science, and he loves reading history and historical fiction. And so he's excited for a good school year. Now, one of the things that was an intention for me was to help him begin to go to sleep earlier, 15 minutes earlier every night, a couple weeks before school started. Well, that was a great plan, although one of the weeks he was at Grandma's, that was last week, and we picked him up on Saturday, and he probably went to bed between 10 and 11. I think he's starting the melatonin shift that happens in adolescence. And melatonin is a hormone, a chemical that actually causes you to be sleepy. And as you enter adolescence, the melatonin production occurs later. And so that's the reason that her kids, usually teenagers, stay up later and want to sleep later. It's as if they move two time zones west, is how a colleague of mine describes it, Frank Cross. And he says, when you realize that and you can work in harmony with that, you can be more successful. Now, some schools are recognizing that, and they're actually starting their high schools later in the morning than elementary schools. Other schools are not doing that because of budgets and busing and things like that. But over the summer, my son Alex has been staying up later, and he's usually reading actually. Sometimes he's watching the Olympics. But getting ready for school and getting him enough sleep is important. And he's always been a go-to-bed-later child since he was a baby. And so right now we're negotiating the bedtime, and it has been 9:30 for him to be in bed and going to sleep. Well, it's been 9:30 in bed, and then he'll read. So what we've negotiated is at 9:30 bedtime, and if for 4 weeks he gets himself up and ready in the morning, out the door on time, and to school on time, then we'll negotiate a later bedtime. And as long as he's doing well in school, so that he's getting enough sleep, because during sleep, several things happen. Well, number one, our immune system gets recharged, and memories that have been created during our waking hours are consolidated, or if you think of it like gluing together, occurs when we sleep. If that doesn't happen, there are glial cells, special cells in our brain, that go around like a little vacuum cleaner, and they clean up any weak connection between our brain cells, which sometimes means we don't have the memories. If we get a good night's sleep and give the chemicals and processes in our brain the opportunity to glue or consolidate the memories into long-term memory, we're going to remember more effectively. So when we cut our sleep, we make learning and memory more challenging. How much sleep is enough sleep? I'm of the mind that you need to know yourself. And with kids who are growing, you know, they you really listen to your body. Are you tired? You know, and go to bed earlier if you're tired. You know, we've tried some things with getting up, you know, not doing homework late at night, but getting up early in the morning. Better to get it done earlier and then relax before bed. If you have trouble sleeping or getting to sleep or your kids have trouble getting to sleep, get them away from screens an hour before bed. Computers, phones, iPads, televisions. It actually then will help. And having a desk lamp on versus overhead lighting also helps the melatonin production in the brain. I learned last weekend from my colleague Lynette. So whether it's, you know, that hour before bed, they're taking a shower, they're packing for the next day, you are having some family time, but get them away from screens and they will fall asleep more quickly, as will you. So that's the piece on sleep. Now, our school this past summer did a reading project. The librarian filled out a bingo card, and each square had a different genre of reading. There was poetry, adventure, science fiction, biography, and I believe there were two of each and the free spot in the middle. And there were prizes when you get back to school for every bingo that you had, the standard across down diagonally, and a bonus $25 gift card, I believe, to a book, whether it was Amazon, Barnes & Noble, but for books. If you did a blackout, covered everything, because that meant you read 25 books. I'm very excited because Alex read at least 27 and probably a couple more because at the beginning he was rereading some of his Calvin and Hobbes collections. I am very grateful that he enjoys reading because reading opens the world to a person. Because when you can read someone else's perspective, learn to empathize with characters in a book, there's so many ideas that open up through reading. So with a little push from Mom, he completed his bingo card. We have one book left to read. And last night, we had one sports story, not his favorite thing to read about. And I said it needed to be done before school started. And we had some adventures planned today. So he started reading at about 7:30 last night, 170 pages, and he stayed up till it was done. So much for my plan of getting him to bed earlier. I let him make that choice. He wanted to get it finished. And so he slept late this morning, and he's planning to go to bed earlier tonight, which I'm very proud of and appreciative that he's doing that, so he's ready for his first day of school tomorrow. You know, the part of, you know, the age with the tweens, the brain is going through a lot of development in that stage in terms of organization, in terms of being able to break long-term projects down into smaller steps in terms of judging how long things take. And one of the things Frank Cross with the Upside Down organization also talked about is that as our schools are moving away from standard clock faces and going to digital, it's making it harder for our children to develop the ability to know how long things take because they can't see it. They can't see 15 minutes ticking by. And so I was really excited to learn about something called a time timer. And I purchased mine through Amazon, I believe. And they come in various sizes. The neat thing about a time timer is that it has a split at the top and a piece of red acetate that you can pull out. So when you pull this across the face of the clock, for example, let's say 15 minutes, so then 0 to 15 is now covered in red. And as that ticks down, the amount of red is smaller. It helps to visually know how much time is gone, how much time, more importantly, how much time you have left. I love this for myself because when I'm engaged in projects, when I am so in the flow and so focused, I am a poor judge of how much time passes. So I use the time timer for myself. And I'll set 15-minute increments. 5 an hour, so it will beep. And then I'll set another 15 minutes, it will beep. So it keeps me on task. Now, you know, if you or your kids get sucked into video games or Facebook, this is a good way that you can set the timer. You can see how much time you have left, judge when it's time to shut down, or how much time, learning how much time your homework really does take. Because a lot of times we moan, groan, and complain about, oh, it's going to take me so long, when actually it really doesn't take as long as we think. So the time timer is a great visual tool to help not only the tweens, but anyone who has challenges with judging time passing or budgeting the amount of time available based on the amount of work that there is to be done. And that is not something that comes naturally. That is a learned skill for the brain. So having some guidelines around that, some structure around that, and sometimes some freedom to make the choices. And that means that homework doesn't get finished. That means that there may be late work or lower grades, which Alex experienced last year, my son, and basically had to learn from that, that this is what happens. And how, if you do a little at a time and you plan ahead, you know, and take a break. But when you take a break, set the time timer and come back. So being aware about time is helpful. Having alarms, setting alarms so people are prepared. Giving yourself some extra time so we're not cutting things so closely. And that's been a lesson I'm still working to learn, and Alex and I are together going to work on that this year, where we both, our goal is to walk out the door together at 7:45, send him to school and me to work. That gets him there in time to have breakfast if he chooses to at school. They serve usually wonderful hot breakfast for an amazingly low amount of money. And it also means that I can get to work with time to spare without speeding. So working together, we can have more productive mornings, be prepared, and that lower stress level when you start the day, also good for your brain, because when we're stressed, the chemicals that we release in the brain, and as well as the emotions that go along with that experience, the cortisol, sometimes the adrenaline that speeds up our heart rate, we, our thinking is clouded, we tend to forget things, we rush, our patience decreases, and so we create this process that can be pretty stressful. So what if we planned ahead? What if we create a checklist? Checklist frees the brain up from having to remember everything. You know, when we were in elementary school, a lot of us learned about using flashcards or cue cards. It's a great way to learn and remember things. Or putting reminders. You know, before we had technology and cell phones, we could use pop-up reminders in our calendar, and I've gotten better at doing that on mine. I also have learned that the reminder only dings once on a calendar. So if I really want to do something, I'll set some alarms. And I can set multiple alarms on my phone as well. Find the tools that work for you. Now, some kids are great. They love to be first. They're on top of it. Things are clicking. Awesome. Sometimes a checklist for remembering things for sport, what needs to go to school, putting things on a calendar and spreading out the dates and color coding them, and that's one of the things that we're going to work on this year. Alex has a calendar we're going to hang on the wall. Right by his desk, and the dry erase calendar with dry erase markers that will allow him to break down long-term projects. Because sometimes what would happen, he'd say, Alex, do you have any homework? No. Well, not that night, but maybe in a week there's something due. So taking the time to talk about that, to break that down, is helpful as well. So sleep, looking at time and budgeting time, and checklists. Sometimes, again, if a child doesn't have a good sense of time passing, and they can get hung up in something in the morning and pretty soon they haven't realized that they've spent 15 or 20 minutes on something and now they're behind. Another tool that Lynette uses is she made a recording of songs that her son likes, and then they went through and timed out. Okay. You need to have, by the time you get to this song, you need to be out of bed and into the shower. By the time this song starts, you need to be dressed. By the time this song starts, you need to have breakfast. So the audio cues were helpful. And I've used that with Camp Hofner as well. Rather than trying to corral 11 or 12 kids, my nieces and nephews, we were changing activities, whether it was getting ready for dinner, getting ready to go out on a field trip kind of adventure, I would just play different music. And so some songs meant clean up what you're doing. Other songs meant get ready to go. And get ready to go meant make sure you have a water bottle. Whoever was in charge of snacks for the day got the snacks together. And by playing the music, I didn't have to repeatedly say over and over. So you can use musical cues and allow the child or you to pick music you like as the cues. So having some systems in place can actually help with that time processing if it's something that is a lesser strength for you in your thinking. Something else that will really help your brain to perform at its best is, what are you feeding it? Would your vehicle, car, truck, minivan, would that run if you didn't put gas in it, didn't check the oil, if it didn't have water? Again, we take really good care of our vehicles, much more so than we do of our brains. So what does your brain need? Well, your brain needs vitamins and minerals that it cannot make itself, our body cannot make, so we need to eat nutritiously. Now, a couple of reasons that my family takes vitamin and mineral supplements. One, the food today does not have the same vitamin and mineral content as food did 50 years ago. Soil is depleted, et cetera. So there's that. And we don't always eat the most nutritious diet. We try, but it doesn't always happen. So antioxidants are the vitamins that keep our brain from oxidizing. For example, if you were to cut an apple and leave it sit out on a counter, it turns brown. That's oxidizing. Well, there is something called free radicals in our bodies, and the free radicals love fat, and the brain is the fattiest organ of the body. So these free radicals will go to the brain and to the fat, the myelin, the insulation around our nerve cells that allows signals to travel so fast, it will attack the myelin. It's like, and it oxidizes, breaks it apart, damages the nerve cells, damages memory. So what can help that? The antioxidant vitamin, vitamin A, vitamin E. And it, if you don't want to have to worry about which one does what, if you eat the colors of the rainbow, deeper colors, higher nutrition generally, eat a variety of colors of fruits and vegetables and make them whole fruits and vegetables rather than processed or canned with sugars and other chemicals, you're going to get a higher nutrition value and have better protection for your brain. Isn't that awesome? And your brain also needs choline to make memory. Choline is found in many foods. Now, there was just a study that came out today about eggs being worse for you than smoking. It's like, okay, wait, really? When they looked at the study and they looked at the group, they were already, the 1,200 people in the study already had high cholesterol. And there were other factors. So one egg a day generally is good for you. Remember, there's eggs in other foods. So, and know whether or not you have other factors related to cholesterol. The egg yolk is pure protein, and it also has choline. Now, choline is necessary for the chemical process, again, of making memory. It needs to form acetylcholine, which only happens if you take choline into your body. And there are other sources of choline besides eggs. So if you don't want to have eggs, because if you're concerned about cholesterol, then you can have other things. And if you go to brainbonanza.com and under links and freebies, and yes, we'll ask you to sign in so that I can stay in contact with you and we never sell or give away your email addresses. But if you, in exchange for email addresses, you have access to all the links and freebies that I have up, and one of them has a Breakfast for the Brain chart by Sandra Bauman, who has written a couple books on eating in the brain and learning in the brain, actually. And so there's a chart there with combinations of food that you can have with carbohydrate and protein, because you want carbohydrates that are going to break down slowly so that you don't get hungry. Things like oatmeal digest slowly versus the sugary cereals that give you a sugar rush, and then boom. And so boom meaning the crash. And then you're hungry and you have trouble focusing. So you're actually impacting your insulin as well. So having nutrition, you need that slow-burning carb in the morning with protein, whole grain. And the choline also helps with concentration in addition to memory. Liver is another good source. Now, everybody likes liver. Salmon is a good source. Also has omega-3 fatty acids. Atlantic cod. I believe sardines are on that list. So mostly meats and seafoods. Canadian bacon. It's also found in vegetables. Broccoli has choline as well as antioxidants. So broccoli's good. And nobody says you can't have broccoli for breakfast. Put it in an omelet. So we'll have a stir fry with vegetables for breakfast. Also good. Oatmeal has choline. So what you eat can either, and Alex will say, I'll ask him, are you taking your best brain to school today? You know, having yogurt, which is a protein source, along with whole grain toast with some peanut butter. I make homemade granola bars, which do not have added chemicals in them. So there's those which have a combination. There's a little honey in there in the oatmeal. So you'll get both the quick sugar and the slow sugar. It also has peanut butter, which has protein. I also add wheat germ, and wheat germ is a great source of choline. So protein and slow-burning carbs, you know, having some fruit with your breakfast. That'll give you some good nutrition and some healthy carbs as well. So breakfast is so, so, so important to have your best brain for the day, whether that's work or school. It's important to eat breakfast. So I'm happy that when I talk with clients or I'm speaking at conferences and I ask that question, talking about how do you have your best brain at work, school, or home, and or maximizing your cognitive capacity, and we talk about breakfast, and more hands are going up that, yes, I have breakfast. And breakfast, by the way, if it's a donut, sugary cereals, bagels, we're not getting great nutrition and we're getting lots of calories. So think about what you're having for breakfast to maximize nutrition and your ability to concentrate and create new memories. Choline, protein, slow-burning carbs. Let me check the time. Oh, it's already 7:33. So we talked about sleep. We talked about nutrition. We talked about time and having some and checklists and ways that we can help our children become responsible for themselves with some guidance from us. And as they grow older, the idea is that we can ask questions and guide their choices or offer, think about this, this, and this, giving them strategies for decision-making, because, again, the brain isn't born knowing how to do that. So whether it's you use I use a traffic light where when you're facing a decision, you red light and stop. First, or you can do the yellow light first, depending on which model you like. So you can have a yellow light, which is caution, might need to do some adjusting. Red light, I need to check in, get some more information before I make my decision. Be aware of some consequences that could occur that maybe I don't know about because I don't have experience in that area, whether it's an adult or a child. And then make a decision, and then the green light just go. But it's recognizing when that yellow light needs to come on. When are there some risks I may not know about? That uneasy feeling I might have in my chest or my gut tells me I need to move to a red light situation. I need to stop before I make this decision and get some information from someone who has more knowledge and experience, a teacher, a counselor, a parent, an aunt or uncle. And if it's at work, a colleague, a supervisor. There are many online resources you could check for more information. So learning how to make good decisions is a process. Decision-making is a process. And as parents, the more we can help, we can guide that, given options, so that kids learn about that decision-making process. So you're not always deciding for them, allowing them to have the consequences, which sometimes is very painful as a parent, to watch a child fail something or to get a low grade. And I've told Alex I'd rather have it happen to him in elementary school so he can learn from that so he makes better choices in junior high, high school, and college. The brain needs to learn what doesn't work and eliminate that option just as it needs to learn what does work. Brain learns by trial and error. So, and sometimes you can have those trial and error in books and reading. You can have it in conversations. They don't have to always learn from firsthand experience. So what else can you do? Again, this goes back to some planning, looking at, you know, can you do some things with meal planning, snack planning, develop some routines or as much as you can. The brain likes routines. It gives some comfort and structure. Now, within those routines, have room for flexibility, creativity, and spontaneity. The brain also likes novelty and fun. It gets the attention and the energy up. So taking a break, playing a game, or exercising. Exercising is wonderful when it comes to learning because when we exercise aerobically, get our heart rate up, whether it's walking, running, basketball, moving, it increases the production of something called BDNF. BDNF is a neurotrophic factor in the brain. Neuro meaning brain, nerves, troph meaning growth. It's like fertilizer in the brain. When you exercise, your brain produces BDNF, which causes the growth of nerve cells. So exercise actually helps you build connections, new connections in your brain. Woohoo! So taking that break, playing a sport, or just shooting hoops with some friends, jump rope, playing Wii Sports, something that gets you physically active, helps you to have your better brain. Running and playing outside, and I know some of you listening have probably seen the stories about the two girls from Evansdale, Iowa. Is it Lacey Cook? Oh, their names are escaping me, so I'm going to look at it. Because there's some fear around our kids being out on their own and running and playing that many of us did all of the time when we were kids. We would go out and we had a sign or a signal. There was a flashing light that would come on, usually within 30 minutes of dark, that mom would say, okay, when you see that light blinking, it's time to come home. And we would play in the neighborhood, which was, I don't know, 4-block square area in a small town in Iowa. And so, here we go, the name. 8-year-old. Now I'm just going to have to come back here. So while that's loading, but the fear that's created is caused us, you know, to really keep our kids closer. and not to let them, you know, run, play, bike. I mean, I have a conversation with my son when he was staying with his cousin about being safe if somebody approaches you and that kind of thing. But it's important that our kids get that physical exercise. So if it's not that they're riding the bike around the neighborhood, if they're going to shoot hoops at school where they're supervised by teachers, whether it's playing basketball, playing on a school playground, shooting hoops in your own yard. The two girls that are still missing, is 8-year-old Elizabeth Collins and her 10-year-old cousin Lyric Cook have been missing for, I want to say it's approaching a month. And so that has caused a number of parents here in the state of Iowa to have some additional concerns about kids. So exercise safely, ride bikes with your kids, do walking trails, have them be in groups together so they are safe. And they were riding together on a bike trail when they disappeared. So, you know, the question is, can you get exercise safely? Yes. And do our children need some room to grow? Yes. And some lessons in being safe. So ride bikes, basketball, run in place, use we. But that physical exercise will help your brain to grow. The BDNF. And also, 30 minutes of exercise, I believe it's twice a week, or three times, we'll have to double check, reduces your risk of Alzheimer's by 50%. As reported by Dr. John Medina in Brain Rules. So exercise is good for adult brains, too, as well as our kids' brains. So we've talked about now sleep, nutrition, exercise, decrease stress by having systems and checklists in place. And depending on the age of your kids, get them involved in creating the checklist. Get their input, because that ownership will increase the odds that they will follow the checklist. And talk about the value. What's that going to do for them? How's that going to help them be successful? And so we have about 3 minutes left. Alex, are you going to join us to answer a couple quick questions before our time is up? Okay, well, come on over. Because we do have a few minutes left, and he's heard me talk about him throughout the show. So I'm going to unplug the headset here. Alex, will you talk, please, to our listeners about some of the things that you're thinking about doing to be successful in sixth grade?
Some of the things I'm going to do to be successful in sixth grade is get my homework in on time and get good grades. So it'll go on the report card, and in the future, I can get a good job and go to college.
What are some of the specific things that you're thinking about doing to help get yourself organized in the morning, particularly because getting up in the morning can sometimes be a challenge for the two of us because we're not naturally morning people?
Well, the morning wake-up situation is my main thing, getting organized, because usually I'm lazy and school.
And getting up.
Yeah.
It's slow to get up. And so how can you, what are you thinking of doing this year that's going to help you get out of bed sooner and be more organized to get out the door on time?
I'm going to ask my mom to turn on my reading light, which is really bright, so I can get up.
Anything else?
No, nothing else. And make a checklist of everything I need to do before I go off to school.
Okay, thanks. And if there was something you could tell other kids about things that they could do to have a good brain at school, what are some things that you would suggest?
My number one first thing is have a good breakfast, because it powers your brain throughout the whole school day and gives you energy.
Anything else?
Nope.
Okay, so having a good breakfast and... about keeping track of homework. What are some things that you can do that will help you keep track of what assignments are due when?
I use these little folder things that go in my trapper, so that keeps me organized in my trapper, and I can know what has to be turned in when.
Do you also use any kind of notebook or planner?
Yes, we all get a planner, and I use notebooks.
Okay. So we're agreeing that we're going to have a successful start to the school year in sixth grade. And anything else that you would like to say that would help other kids to be successful in school?
Turn in your homework all the time and eat a good breakfast. And ask for help from your teachers if we need it.
Okay. Well, thanks very much. We'll check in with you later in the year to see how things are going and how the checklists are working. And, you know, working with your kids, remembering that you're on the same team, in the same family, that your goals, talking about your goals for success is also important. And take great care of those brains because you only get one, as Alex will tell you, and you're together for life. So learning to take good care of your brain is really important. So he can't tell you now because he ran off to finish something else as he's going to be heading to bed soon. So thank you so much for listening. I wish you the best start to your year, and hopefully you'll be back as our guests join us for future segments to boost your brain. Until next time, take action on something you heard to boost your brain and stay safe.
Thank you for listening to Spark Radio with Miss Melanie. Please share this show link with those you believe would enjoy and benefit from listening. We invite you to join us for upcoming shows with special guests and more sparks. May a spark you heard ignite a positive change in your life. Good day.